most small business people have a why of, I don't want a boss and I want to look after my family.
You're listening to Season 2 of Not Another Business Show with your host, Tracy Sheen.
I've got a friend, right? He likes to hire DVD TV series, order pizza, have a carton of beer, and sit there and binge watch, right? Can you make money out of that? No, you can't. I teach my clients you need to have a public face that is also congruent with your own beliefs, and you need a private face.
Start with why. Simon Sinek caused a tidal wave in the entrepreneurial world a few years back when he released his TED Talk around the golden circles, the premise of which is people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. So tell me, why do you do what you do? Welcome to Season 2, Episode 10. We're halfway through the season, and today we tackle a subject that's intrigued me since I first saw the Golden Circle TED Talk 3 years ago, and it's often left me pondering why I do what I do. Do we really need to have a why to be successful in business? And what happens to those who lose their reason for being in business? Jeff Hetherington, the Clarity CEO, started today's show speculating that it's not always easy to just make money from your why, and how a public versus private why is his go-to method for helping clients. As always, though, today we'll hear from a range of people with their own take on their why. And you'll get to see if they can really articulate why they do what they do and whether or not they actually see the need to articulate their why as something of importance to the overall success of their business. But before we start diving in too deep, let's loop back to Jeff and hear his take on the whole Simon Sinek start with why.
My public face is I want to help 1,000 small business owners thrive past their first 5 years. And I really want to do that. That's great. But my private face is I'm bloody good at what I do. I have a great time doing it. And by doing what I do, I'm able to help work towards giving my family the lifestyle I want them to have. But if I went to you and said, Tracy, you need to work with me for 12 months because I want to give my family a great lifestyle, you're going to say bugger off. But that might be my absolutely core why I do things is I'm a family. I've got to look after my family. I want them to have a good lifestyle. But the public face has to be congruent with you as well. So for me, absolutely, I want my family to have a great lifestyle, but I want to use my skills to help small business people thrive past their first 5 years because I love doing it and I get great results and all that sort of stuff. So for me, there's always the public face and there's the private face, and that's the why. And I think if people are honest, they'll admit their private face tends to be fairly selfish or can be seen as selfish. But if that's congruent with a public face, then that's a good thing.
A public why and a private why. That makes a whole bunch of sense to me. A lot of business owners I speak to all share the desire to work for themselves. In part, they don't want to work for someone else. And I'm one of those people. But I wonder how much thought beyond that people really give their own reasons for getting into the business that they do. This whole thing about needing a why has driven me to the point of distraction for years, as I pulled apart my own business trying to figure out what it was about it, or me, that made me want to pursue it. I chatted to loads of other people who, when probed, seemed to have quite solid whys. Take Katrina Pollard from CP Communications, for example.
I get so much joy out of knowing that I can help people grow their businesses, be the people that they want to be by sharing my experiences and my knowledge and my vulnerabilities and, you know, the things that I do. I really love that idea of, for me to have stepped into the spotlight, but doing it in a way that is authentic and real to me. And that's not about being on TV necessarily. It's actually about writing and speaking and sharing in all of the tactics and all of the products and consulting and all of that kind of stuff that I do. So it's really about my contribution to the world.
Katrina's why reminded me of something that New York Times bestselling author Kevin Cruz shared with us in a previous episode that, and I'm paraphrasing here, when you can align what you do with helping others get to where they want to go, then you're onto a business that will make a real difference. So for Katrina, it all comes back to being able to assist people to grow in their business by using and implementing techniques and methods that she's really good at. For others, our why can come from something far more personal, something that impacts our family. Helen McNall from Wellbeing for Dogs has a great example of this.
My whole passion and purpose is about how do we improve the lives of dogs. My way of doing that is through the way that we feed them, the way that we nourish them. So how can we improve the way that we nourish our dogs? That's my life's passion.
I love that Helen recognised her passion for dogs. The deeper part to Helen's why came about because of her own two little poodles.
I think that for me, the little poodle wasn't going to make old bones, basically, and so I did need to understand diet more. And it kind of becomes an intellectual passion, as you can see. There's a moral and all that sort of stuff part to it, and there's a problem to solve. But at the end of the day, you know, we know that food is medicine and that we need the fundamentals of food to heal. So I kind of tied together a whole pile of things that I'm really interested in. If I wasn't working in how we feed dogs, I'm really passionate about animal advocacy, you know, whether that's elephants in Africa and hunting them for ivory or domestic pets or, you know, possums. I mean, I just think we were given dominion not to be, to have compassion and humanity, not to have such terrible plights against them. So if I wasn't doing this, I'd probably be still doing something with animals, yes.
Then you have people like Liz Campbell. Remember Liz, the word stylist from our content creation episode? So Liz shared with me that for her, there was never really any other option than to be a writer, even if it did take her a few years to figure that one out.
Ever since I was a little girl, loved writing. I remember giving my mum my first book when I was 4. I was in kindy. I'd written a story about a runaway $1 coin that fell down a drain and got washed out to sea and got washed up on a beach and found its way back. But so my journey started when I was very young. I was a published journo from when I was 14, so I'd organised my own work experience. I didn't actually want to be a journalist at that point. I wanted to be in radio. The paper was my last choice, and I got the paper. And I was a bit disappointed, but once I got there, I got to write a story on all the work experience kids in my year, and I went around and I interviewed them all about what they were doing that week of their work experience, and it got published as a full page in the paper, and I loved it. I just had stars in my eyes after that. That was when I was 14 in year 9, so year 10, 11 and 12, I organised work experience at other papers. Then I got into uni as a journalist. I started in the country paper and I learned a lot, which I now recognise has set me up for having the business. I went on from there and I worked for News Limited for quite a number of years. And then I was offered a promotion with a standalone brand new magazine. But after 3 months of being there, it just wasn't really what I wanted to do. So I ended up, I'd already started the business. It came off the back of one inquiry a couple of years before I left. But when I left, I really put my heart and soul into it. It grew really quickly because I found that there was a real need for online content writing.
The interesting thing for me so far is that our why, our reason for doing what we're doing, is something that's as individual as we are. Let's check back in with Jeff, though, to see what else he has to say about this whole passion thing.
I teach a thing called pragmatic passion, okay? I really have a problem with this bullshit about find your passion and you'll never have a job again. I've got a friend. He's been playing guitar since he was 8 years old. He's got a Fender Stratocaster. He's got five or six really super expensive guitars. He goes on guitar camps to America. He's in his 40s. He's a crap guitarist, right? But he loves playing guitar. He's passionate about it. His eyes light up. He talks about Slash and he talks about Mark Knopfler doing this sort of stuff, and he's really into it. But he realized at a fairly early age that while he was passionate about it, he was never going to earn a living at it. So he's a doctor. He's not a bad GP. So what he's done is he's created a life where he has a skill set he's competent or more than competent at, and he's using that to support his passion, which is playing guitar. I've got another friend who's probably in the top seven security coders in the world. He does all the coding for ASIO and people like that. He is so damn good at it. He really is. He hates doing it. It's a skill he's great at, but he hates doing it. His passion is really simple. He likes to hire DVD TV series, order pizza, have a carton of beer, and sit there and binge watch. Can you make money out of that? No, you can't. I know, because I tried to put him as an online film critic, but he wasn't interested in that either. But his passion, his genuine passion, is watching great television, great movies, while having pizza and beer in the comfort of his own home. But his skill set is this fantastic head that's able to create these encryption logarithms and stuff like that. So both of these guys have got passions. They've identified them. They can't live off them. So you've got to be pragmatic about your passion. If you can build your life around your passion, or if your passion is something people are willing to pay you for, fantastic. The thing is, most small business people get into their own business because it's a skill they're good at. So in other words, it's something they're competent or better than competent at. It's not necessarily something they're passionate at. There are an awful lot of people that are naturopaths, that are chiropractors, that are herbalists, who are poor and are always poor. Why are they poor? They happen to be passionate about what they do. They might be okay at it, but they don't know how to monetize it. So pragmatic passion.
A pragmatic passion. This concept intrigued me, as it seemed to contravene everything that we've been fed about finding your why or your passion. Some of us also have the problem or opportunity in life and in business that a lot of different things interest us. And conversely, we tend to lose interest with things once we feel like we have a good grasp of them. The term for this has been coined by Emily Wapnick. It's called a multi-potentialite. Now, I can identify with this concept of being a multi-potentialite quite strongly, and as such, I don't feel as though I have any one real burning desire or passion. So I was keen to explore how this can affect us in trying to find our why. Emily gives an amazing TED Talk on multi-potentialites, which, if you haven't seen it, and I highly recommend that you do, I'll link out to it in the show notes. As it turns out, our Clarity CEO, Jeff Hetherington, also identifies with being a multi-potentialite. And he sees it more like this.
You have to be multi-skilled to be a successful small business owner. The problem with multi-potentialites or putty people, I've actually been diagnosed with what they call an aspergic polymath, which means I'm part Rain Man, but I'm pretty good at whatever I decide to do. The thing is, most putty people like me go down, they explore something to the 75, 80, 85% done thing, and then they go, yeah, I can master this, and they move on to something else. The biggest problem with multi-potentialites is they don't see things through to the end. So they get that 80% mark, and they go, yeah, I can do that. Oh, that's interesting. So that's the biggest danger for them in business, is that they don't follow things through to the extent where they lock them in, they systematize them, and things happen. The brilliant thing about them is, though, that they can get in a room with someone involved in their skills or what they're actually, their business is about, and actually blow the socks off people because of their knowledge and how engaging they can be. So I actually think you have to be almost an artificial putty person to be in business, because you've got a lot of skill sets, or else what you do is you focus on a sales skill set and a delivery skill set. So you sell your products, you sell a lot of them, you deliver them well, your clients love you, and that gives you the money to outsource all the stuff you don't want to do.
So whether it's a pragmatic passion or that you are a multi-potentialite who finds a lot of things that light you up, It seems an important takeaway from the drive to find your why is not to get too caught up in needing to have a passion as your reason for being in business. For those listening who have wondered whether they actually have a why, I wanted to make sure we covered off a little around how you begin to dig through your own psyche to figure out your why. So let me introduce John Kirk. John is a business coach who specializes in businesses that are in startup mode. And when I asked him, John had this to say about working through your stuff to understanding your why.
What I say to him is this. I say, look, 12 months from now, 2 years from now, are you still going to be wanting to do what you're about to do? For instance, you know, you'll have some people come in and they say, look, I'm a plumber and I've been working for a plumbing company now for 10 years, but I want to work for myself. That's the first question I ask them is, why do you want to work for yourself? There's got to be a reason. They give me a range of reasons. In many cases, it's I just don't like the boss, or it might be that I want to live my own life and decide when I'm going to work and when I'm not going to work. There was no way in the world I wanted to be a financial planner, but that's the way the industry went. And I ended up as a financial planner. Financial planner led me on to becoming an auditor with the tax office, and from there led me to become a business consultant or a business trainer because I'd had experience in all of those things. So I guess the answer to that is that I tell them, before you do anything, you've got to work out, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Now I want you to go home and I want you to think carefully about why you've actually chosen that business. And if it's only for money, I'd suggest you think a bit more.
John's answer reminded me of our discovery coach, Natasha Vanzetti. Her whole business is based around helping people discover where their real passion and value lies. So I thought it was worthwhile to check back in with Natasha to find out how she actually helps people work through this process of figuring out their why.
Basically break it down into three steps with people now. So it's a process that I've refined over the last few years. So the first step is we go through their story. So what is it that's shifted for them? What's changed? Why is it they're feeling unsettled and unfulfilled in what they're currently doing? Then we go through the style, like how do they actually like to work and when do they feel they're most creative? And then the third step is actually their experience. And I find it's really important to put that step last because our experience can really cloud where we think we should go next. And the shoulds play a big part in this, because if you've been in a career for 5, 10, 15 or 20 years, you kind of have that almost belief that that's all you've got value in and that's all that you can offer. But when we unpack it in reverse and we look at your story and your style first and then take the bits of your experiences actually that you do want to take forward, that's when we can define that anchor point. It is a bit of a process, and I have this knack of being able to pinpoint that for people, because when an individual looks at those three things, it's really hard again for them to filter those pieces out and to connect the dots in a way that makes sense to take them forward. I don't have the emotional attachment to all those pieces of the puzzle, so I can actually quite easily pinpoint and pull out the bits that are necessary and shape that anchor point with people. And you know, that's one of the most exciting parts of what I do, because seeing people come alive on the other side of that, when they can finally articulate what it is they're all about, that's when the magic can happen.
That all sounds great, but I wanted to know, has Natasha ever worked with anyone and not been able to help them? I mean, are there really some people who just don't have a why in business?
Well, good question. I think a lot of the time it depends on how far down the path people are. And what I say with discovery coaching is, I'm not here to give you all the answers. You have all the answers. I just help you discover them. So for some people that are just starting out on the journey, finding that anchor is just finding that starting point. So finding something they're happy to lay claim to today to start moving forward. For other people, finding that anchor point, you know, they've probably come a fair way down the path already, and it is just a matter of pivoting a little bit from where they've currently been putting their energy. So it really does depend on how far down the path someone's come as to how quickly they can latch onto that and take that forward. For those of the people that are just starting out, so maybe they've just left their corporate life or they're thinking of leaving corporate, what we do is we find an anchor point that resonates with them today, now, and we can start taking action to move forward. And then I give them the tools and strategies to notice what to pay attention to along the way. I kind of call it your feel your way to success. So you start to understand what feels right in your business and what you're creating and what doesn't, and then you filter accordingly. So yeah, it depends on how far down the path you are. Some people, they can finish a few sessions and they've pivoted just exactly where they need to go and whooshka, they take off. And for others, it takes a bit more guidance. But what we do is we find that starting point and then we take the necessary action to start to get some more answers coming forward.
Okay, so it seems everyone can find some internal drivers to their success if they're prepared to put a little time and effort into the process. For those of us, though, who don't have 6 months to take off and 50 grand to throw at various courses in the hopes we reach nirvana and come away enlightened with our own passions, where do we start?
So I think once people realise that something needs to shift, even if they don't know what it is, just paying attention to the fact that something needs to change is a really important part of the process. The next one is discovery. Now, you said, you know, jokingly, take 6 months and spend 50 grand to figure it out. I tried to figure it out by sitting there doing nothing and spinning around in a little circle, trying to figure it all out in my head, but that you can't do it that way. So the discovery process is a really important one about understanding what actually makes you come alive and what gives you the energy. So what are you doing on a day-to-day basis that gives you energy and makes time fly, as opposed to some of the jobs that you do and you may be really good at, but you'd be quite happy to let them go forever. So that discovery is stage two. Now, stage three is action. You need to take action. You need to go out there and try different things and test different ideas to get the answers. You can't sit there and figure this idea out in your head, because the idea could be great, but until you go out and take action on that and actually implement that and work with clients or put a product to market, you're not going to get that understanding, that internal feeling of, does this actually energize me and feel great? Or is it just another idea that's probably suited to someone a little bit better? Then you've got the fear and the doubt. So the fear and the doubt is always going to come and smack you in the face whenever you're pushing out of the comfort zone and trying something new and testing an idea that might be a little bit off center to what you've been known for. That's one that I think is really important for people to recognize and seek support and help on, because if we let the fear take over, we just go back to our little safety zone and stick there and, you know, nothing much else will happen. And then stage five is coming home. It is the coming to that realization and understanding through the process of feeling your way to what's right and what's not and what you can move forward on and what you can let go of. And then you're coming home to that place that just lights you up. We actually are doing work that you love. Now, it's not an overnight process. It is something that does take some time, but I think it's really, really worth it.
All right, so I'm hoping that wherever you are on your own personal why am I doing this journey, that you took something away from today. Whether it's the need to create your personal and public why, whether you already have a strong passion that drives you to do what you do every single day, or whether you're still wondering if you even have a why. There's something to be said for being able to share why you do what you do with your clients and community. So it's worth taking the time to figure out what this looks like for you. A big thanks to this week's guests, the Clarity CEO, Jeff Hetherington, Katrina Pollard from CP Communications, Helen McNall from Wellbeing for Dogs, the word stylist, Liz Campbell, business coach, John Kirk, and our discovery coach, Natasha Vanzetti. As always, though, the biggest thanks goes to you for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with your friends and consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Super easy, super quick, and means that we get to reach an even bigger audience. I'm leaving you today with a quote from the guy who started me down the rabbit hole of finding my own why, Simon Sinek. For great leaders, the golden circle is in balance. They are in pursuit of why they hold themselves accountable to how they do it, and what they do serves as the tangible proof of what they believe.
Not Another Business Show is edited and produced by Corporate Podcast Productions. Let your story be heard.